This is Urs Malin, April 11th, 2003, a lecture on persona.
For the wonderful invitation I got to come to your wonderful city, and especially I also want to thank John and Charlie Krause, who welcomed me and who showed me around. That was very, very impressive, very, very beautiful. So thank you very much. Just a word to be a little bit more relative about, well, I would say, theatrically speaking, I have a great future behind me. I wasn't really general manager of the opera of Geneva. That would have been great. But I had a title which was even more, even better. It probably has to do with my lecturing about persona. I have to tell that. It's a French title, and it was called Régisseur Général du Grand Théâtre de Genève. You want me to repeat it? that was real beautiful. The only thing is the title was the title was much better than the thing I had to do, because I was responsible that not only the curtain went up at the right moment, the right measure, but also it went down at the right measure, which incidentally my predecessor once messed up in the end of Carmen. You know, he was conducting himself and the stagehand thought that was for him. And he pushed the button, and the curtain closed. And when that damn curtain closed, you couldn't stop it. and there was a very, very temperamental Hungarian conductor. And my friend and predecessor told me he never saw anybody as mad as him. So I really tried not to fall into that pit. Now, then, as Chantal, I reconnect while teaching teachers. That's the big advantage. Teaching teachers, you don't have to be able to teach yourself, because they are supposed to do it. But so I reconnected with my glorious past doing musicals. And you know, that's really a shadow side. But it's the most beautiful thing personally you could imagine. As Stanley Kaye said it, the strongest feeling of neurotic power is conducting. Because you just raise your hand and wonderful music comes. But, well, you can do that, of course, with your record player as well. But then you're a little bit less admired. whereas people think you're really responsible for what happens. And now that really, I think, we have to go into the depth of psychology. Now, we will go into the details of the persona as a generally underestimated archetype in Jungian circles. Because Jungian circles and Jungian individuals are so keen to look for depth, but also have tendency sometimes to neglect appearances, to dread the superficiality of everyday life, which however probably determines and rules, statistically speaking, the greatest part of our lifetime. It's a Shakespeare quotation, which is apt to that. I have never seen philosopher who could endure the toothache patiently, however they have writ the style of gods. Now, also the Austrian poet Hugo von Hofmannsthal has written something which I think is very beautiful. Depth has to be hidden on the surface. I think that's very important. I think it's true that just the persona influences and determines a great part of our daily life. A Latin saying says, mundus vult decipi. The world wants to be deceived. And I don't just think of the personal appearance of people, but also of the influence of advertising, of TV commercials, of lifestyle, of fashion. So our topic will be treated from a rather broad perspective, including aspects of fashion, cosmetics, plastic surgery, and so on, which when we don't come to it tonight, we will go more into it tomorrow. We will talk about the function of models of fitness and slenderness, function and shadow of beauty, of vanity, of narcissism, awkwardness and embarrassment, persona and developmental aspects, persona and idealization. Now, one thing I usually like, it's not that I just lecture an hour until everybody gets sort of sleepy. but if there is any question or any contribution, I would rather like that we do it right away, because there are so many different aspects and facets to the theme, to the topic, that waiting until the last quarter of an hour, most of it has been forgotten, so I think it was much more lively if after some time I ask questions. I'm very glad for contributions, because it's just something I suggest, something I propose, but that's something we all are confronted with, willingly or unwillingly. I would like to start with the persona as definition, with the functions of the persona and some of the dangers of the persona. According to Jung, the persona allows the connection or mediation between the inner and the outer world, which is very important. You know, the anima and animus have this function as connecting us with the inner world, but the persona allows that possibility. The forming of the persona is the first personal achievement for a child. That's why we will discuss also the issue of that some children absolutely prefer some kind of clothing and they absolutely detest others. And some, you know, what is usually very bad if young children have to outwear the clothes of older children. So that does not allow them to form their own persona. And that's why I think even some sort of strange predilections of children have to be respected. Children and that was just nothing to do with persona, but it's beautiful anyway. A child was having his birthday and asked, would you like rice or spaghetti? And she liked both. So, am I too soft? Because, you know, I'm certainly in my second half of life, so I'm going more and more introverted. And I don't know when that second half started, but most people don't, as a matter of fact. But now you only know when you're in it. And since I'm becoming more and more introverted, I might just, at the end, just be silent and think. That's definitely too much of introversion. Now, coming back to the child who likes spaghetti and rice, so what do you want? The spaghetti with rice. And she was very disappointed, but that's something which happens to children. But that issue of people wanting, children wanting a certain dress or a certain accessoire, one has to respect it to a certain extent. The forming of the persona, as I said, is the first personal achievement for children, and in a way a compromise between individuality and the collective consciousness, starting with children but going on to the whole life. Now, the persona should be shaped in harmony with the following conditions. First, physical and psychological constitution. If you want to go against it, you compensate, and unless you are Napoleon, you get ridiculous. And even Napoleon was not quite exempt of that. So unless you compensate, you have to shape your persona according to what's given to you by nature, physically and psychologically. second, persona should be in harmony with the, one says in German, according to Freud, the Ich-Ideal, the ideal of the ego, the conscious ideal. How would I like to be perceived? What would I like that people think of me? In my opinion, the Ich-Ideal, the ideal of the ego, is that, it may be risky what I say, that part of the self which is accessible to the conscious. So it's not something, unless, you know, it's really way off, but even then, imagination, fantasy, what would I really want to be is something very important. In my counseling, especially my student counseling, but even now, when people have professional issues, I sometimes ask them, if there were no limitations, no, no borders, what would you really like to do? And so important, because then you have to match the ideal with the possibility. So that ideal is at least as important as the limitations of the constitution. Third, and that really goes more into society, the ideal of a specific environment in a certain profession or in a certain social condition. I quote Jung as the persona segment of the collective psyche. This arbitrary segment of collective psyche, often fashioned with considerable pains, I have called the persona. The word persona is really a very appropriate expression for it, since it originally meant the mask worn by an actor, signifying the role he played. For if he hazard the attempts to distinguish exactly between what is to be regarded as personal and what as impersonal psychic material, we soon find ourselves in the greatest dilemma, because fundamentally speaking, we are bound to admit that what we said of the collective unconscious is also true of the persona's contents. That is, they are of a general character. Now, I came across something where I had these three conditions. But you know, it's very interesting. When you travel in another country, the continent, speaking another language, you are much more sensitive to the persona. And something you probably would not notice, but which I noticed are two things. When you're going in a restaurant, the first thing you ask, how are you feeling today? Well, nobody would ask that in Europe. And you know, I imagine that if I really said how I was feeling today, I just arrived from Vancouver or from San Francisco, and I'm a little bit, that's quite, not quite normal, but it doesn't stay with that. The only possible answer is, how are you feeling today? I'm feeling great. I don't always feel so great. But next wonderful phrase, if you take it textually, I think it would be very bad. Nice girls ask you, what can I do for you? Yeah. Oh. I'm tempted to say a lot if you wanted to. I told you I'm getting more and more second half of life and introverted, and so I don't quite dare. So you don't notice it, but when you come from outside, that's a nice story. I think it's told by Truman or Roosevelt. I don't know. He had one of these diplomatic receptions, and instead of "Hello, how are you today?" he said, "This morning, oh, be careful." Okay. Wow. Won't talk of synchronicity in that case. That's strange. Coming back to Truman or Roosevelt, instead of saying, "How are you feeling today?" he said, "This morning I murdered my grandmother." And nobody reacted to it because no one said. It seems one person reacted and said she certainly deserved it. But, so we are. This is this fourth condition, a social kind of possibility of communicating on a very superficial level, but which helps social things going on. Now, what does belong to the persona? So, from the clothing, fashion, personal expressions, so that you never get the second chance to make a first impression. So, I put on a tie, in case you haven't noticed it. Something which is very strange, when you see photographs of politicians, they always seem to point to something, like that. And I wonder what they point to, but that seems to me to be part of the politician's persona, of wanting to be perceived. Then style of speaking, as we said, formal or casual. Then, of course, hairstyle, lifestyle, furniture, car, where to go to, what to eat, what above all, what to eat not, etc. To the third condition, the what is, for instance, compatible with the persona of a medical doctor, what is compatible with the persona of a lawyer, of a CEO, of a teacher, of a psychologist, of a politician. Jung says in Psychology and National Problems, gossip is surely a bad thing, but I confess I always find it interesting because it is often the only means of getting information about a public figure. Gossip does not need to be true in order to be of value, even if it it's risky, huh? Even if it gives an entirely twisted picture of a man, it clearly shows the way in which his persona, that is, his public appearance, functions. The persona is never the true character. It is a composite of the individual's behavior and of the role attributed to him by the public. Most of the biography of a public figure consists of the persona's history and often of very little individual truth. Well, this is the penalty the man in the limelight has to pay. I just want to also give you an example. I tell you, it's very not only interesting, but you learn a lot traveling in a foreign country. I had to, for a specific reason, to have a medical visit in San Francisco. So I found a medical office, and first floor there were only dentists, and I thought, well, that's not it. Second floor, there was a medical office, and there were two ladies in there. And I discussed that once with my doctor at home. The receptionist has a very important persona function, because if she cares for you, then you feel at home. Because you don't go to the doctor just for fun, usually. You are in need, it's actually something of the extended persona. Now the two ladies were rather harsh. I told them my problem. I wanted a so-called quick test for the blood. I said, "Well, you only can have a whole visit. Then we know what we are doing, and you have to pay for it. Are you willing to do that?" I didn't have much of a choice. And then she pointed me out the money machine on the, across the street. So I went there, and as a matter of fact, I asked, "Am I in the right office?" And yes, yes, in the right office. So I came back with the money. And So I wanted to tell the doctor finally that her receptionists were quite, not so on the friendly side. Turned out that the so-called receptionist was the doctor herself. I was glad I didn't say it, you know. Yeah, I think you only have to travel and things happen to you. A very typical situation, and you know, it always makes you a little bit embarrassed, is when you are photographed and you know that you're photographed. And most people there have a seemingly invincible urge to smile, whereas usually you don't have so much to smile about. So it has to do with self-consciousness versus spontaneity. And that is, there's, as a matter of fact, a very general issue behind it. With the expulsion in Genesis from paradise, man has lost his being in nature, and so he has lost his natural grace. It's interesting that children, with children we see the same development. When they are really unconscious, they are gracious, and sometimes they're so funny, you laugh. But when you laugh, they are shocked, because they don't want to be funny. Now, when they become more conscious, in the development of consciousness and their development, they sometimes want to provoke that you laugh. And then it's very clumsy. But, oh, don't do this to me. So again, you know, something which is unconsciously graceful, unconsciously spontaneous, does much more appeal than anything which is forced on. There's, just to tell you, a very interesting paper by Kleist, a German writer, about the puppet theater. It's a short paper, but it's wonderful, because he says man has the marionette, the puppet on strings, is naturally gracious because it's in the Schwerpunkt. It has the center in itself. Man, during his humans during their development, have lost to be in the center of themselves. And he talks about the dancer. A dancer has to learn to come back to that natural grace. So he says only the inanimated puppet and the god are in that balance, and we are somewhere in between. Now, I would like to just show you as an example a very few slides of the 19th century of families and of professional people, just to show you how the persona today is different. But there we see the persona immediately, whereas when we see our pictures, we think it's natural. I think in only 100 years, people will show pictures when they lecture about persona. I'm wired, and I don't want... Because I'm a Jungian, you know, I usually mess up things. So I'm careful. Yeah. Oh, that would be good. Oh, that's perfect. Now, we could say we tried it out different times, and it worked. It's like in piano lessons. Yesterday, I could do it. Oh, no. Yeah, that's what one usually said. Worked so well yesterday. I think one has to put it out completely. I don't want to comment exactly, but it's, you know, below left, a couple, and it's very typical. The husband is sitting, the wife is standing behind him. it's a good question, but I didn't think. I just thought in a very superficial way that today it's not so anymore. That maybe it's still so. It's still so, but face validity, it's different. Yeah. I think one would not do a couple picture in that way, but I didn't. I really didn't. That's a good question. I didn't think about it. Yep. Oh yes. Really? Oh, thank you very much. Good. Are there other comments or reflections? Because that's a very good question. Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah, like here. Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting. Look, and nobody smiles. So next. These are children. We will. Sure. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That I also thought so. That's certainly one thing. Yes, yeah, because the exposure time was longer. I thought of that. Yeah. 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 These are professional. What one certainly can say, they are not relaxed. And then, I don't want to insist too long. This is school. Professor in the middle, and art school below. Yeah, but now we laugh, but then that's very typical. The picture below, that's absolutely. When you want in a theater to make a funny effect, you do it like that. But they were probably the model of masculinity. Okay, that was the first series. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That didn't disturb you. Did you want to comment more on it? It was just an illustration. Okay, now, the person. Yep. Yes, really? And they didn't mind, it was not a secret. Really? Yeah. Yes, and they did it. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yes. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Thank you very much. Yep. Yeah, and you know, but I absolutely agree with you, but. They do it clever. They use the would-be persona. For a moment, you are feeling and being photographed as the Chinese emperor. It has much more to do with the psychology of those who are being photographed. Those who are photographing, they are just tricksters, you know? And trickster and persona has very much to do. When you are a good trickster, you play on the persona. There's Fables of La Fontaine. I don't know. Well, next time I expect some applause for the pirouette. Well, thank you. That's the way you're supposed to do it, the persona. The persona of the extrovert is more, according more elastical, but less conscious and therefore more autonomous. The extrovert, when the extrovert is, in my opinion, when he is playing with his persona, it's not he who is playing with it, but the persona is playing with him. It's an unconscious possibility of a great degree of adaptation. The persona of the introvert is, and that's maybe also because Jung, or one of the reasons Jung has chosen that term, which I'm not quite happy with, persona, because the mask is not changing, whereas the persona is changing. The persona of the introvert is more mask-like, it's more artificial, and it slips easily. That the introverted person seems to be at a loss in a certain situation. Persona falls through passion, falling in love. According to a saying, nothing is more convincing in love than a great foolishness. You know, that reminds me of somebody who really is in love, in a certain moment loses persona. The one who never loses persona is the seducer, Don Juan, because he doesn't get involved. He is the perfect extroverted man who plays with the persona. And he plays with his persona, but he also plays with persona of the respective women. And you know, that, as a matter of fact, is something very interesting, because we talk about it later. There are some women who really are susceptible to fall in love with that type of trickster, seducer, Don Juan type. The weaker the ego of a person, the greater the intention to have a well-fitted persona, to be too nice, to be too conform, and in any case not to cause any offense. I think it's, and I always say that also in counseling, in analysis, it's very important, it's important to be able to say no before one really can say yes. Because a yes who is only coming out of conformity is not a yes of consent. So the no, also in development, has to be prior to the possibility of saying yes. So, ego, weakness, very often, and that's almost a triviality which I say, has to do with a bad childhood, with an uncertain, unsafe, unprotected childhood. And people, especially women, who have lived that, have very often tendency to accept the most terrible provocations and insults coming from men. I think, that's a situation which I encountered quite often, or which I still encounter often in my work. That there are these unhappy relationships, and the more difficult a partner, a male partner, becomes, the more the woman has tendency to be conformed. And that is just quote one case with which I work, with whom I work. Second generation Italian woman living in Switzerland, who came from a very traditional Italian background. So consciously she emancipated herself from her family, which the ideal of the family, the collective ideal, would have to be, you have to be married, you have to have children, and you have to be religious. So she did not conform with it, always have conformed to it. She had a marriage which was not longing-less. She had a child, but she was living single, and in one of these terrible relationships where she really was, I would say, abused by her partner because he was completely unreliable. Now, the thing is, out of that neurotic compromise of being conformed to the family ideal and breaking away from it, was changed in being conformed to a partnership which was not satisfying. So very often, you know, people change the persons, but they stick to the pattern. And one aspect is some kind of basic uncertainty in themselves, and by that being too conformed to whatever is expected from them. So I think that might be an important topic, so I welcome all comments, questions, or criticism I have of that. Maybe it's a comparable experience you might have made in your work, but it's something unless maybe and hopefully through the help, through analytical help, people get over that to a certain degree. They stick to it. They may change partners, but they stick in the same in the same relationship. Other questions or? Okay, now I would like to show you a video of Masque, and I think it's a great video because it's Marcel Marceau, famous French mime, who is doing a show, Le Faiseur de Masque, the one who makes masks, and he shows in a brilliant way. The different expressions mask can have on your face, but not only on your face, on your being. So again, we hope it works. Yes, please. Mm-hmm. Yep. Good question. Thank you very much for that question. I try to give an answer. And I give an answer from the point of view of persona. Of course, I think there are. It's not either or, it's both. But the male persona is still expected to be autonomous, free, and not involved as a persona. So, men who have that tendency of, I'm afraid most men, we don't talk about shadow, but most men have that tendency of being a little bit unreliable and open. They have a conforming role model, so they don't, neither unconvincing for themselves nor for their friends and their surroundings. And I'm afraid so are women. No, it's the of course much has been done, and I think very, very good, very important things concerning emancipation, but changes of real basic changes of psychology are much slower than we do it consciously. And unconsciously, that's just an attempt to answer to your question. Unconsciously, the clinging to the persona of the one who accepts and is not rebellious and is not emancipated is lasting longer than we would consciously think and collectively think. Because, as a matter of fact, I have, of course, I have recently had the experience that a young man was completely thrown off because his girlfriend said, "Well, I've not quite the same feelings for you anymore." And he told me, and he was crying, "I have planned my whole future for it." Now, believe it or not, 2 weeks later, he had much different problems. You know, and that's typically male persona. It's not so much of a difference of experience, but a big difference in working through it. And persona helps in a way, you know, not in a good way always, also in a bad way. Oh, you ask so difficult questions, right? You ask, you know, we are dealing with persona, that's why you ask so deep questions. What is male love, actually?
Synchronicity. I'm sorry I can't answer your question, but the thing doesn't work.
You know, for him, it was, in a way, planning his future. So that went along with that. She was part of that setting. The most important part, but part. So if that part broke out, he was, for a moment, completely at a loss. But, you know, he had... He is extremely, you know, I would say he's pathologically extroverted and very nervous, but so he had very soon, now I said a little bit exaggerated but true, he very soon had the possibility of being excited and at a loss for other issues. And that's why I think deeply your question is absolutely justified, also because of her reaction. You know, why did I don't know that girl, but usually, you know, feelings don't disappear just like that. There are reasons to it, and with his extreme extroversion, she really might have felt, well, it's not quite that. That's what I suppose, because, you know, In counseling, that's a strange thing. It's not like analysis. In counseling, people come in difficult situations and then you have to do some sort of emergency counseling that they don't do foolish things if possible, and then they disappear. Yeah. That's... I didn't quite get that question.
Don't extroverts sometimes just say things before they totally think them out?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I would say so. Yeah. Very often. Very often. Now, you know, we talked about the shadow of extroverts. Introverts very often don't say anything, even have they thought it out. One has to strive for balance even there. Yes, please. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. What? Yeah, very, very, very. And you know what? That's actually a very, also very, very tempting and interesting subject you addressed there. The sometimes even kind of caricature way they imitate women. without feeling embarrassed. They and you know, as soon as they can play with it, it's quite funny. But when they are identified with it, then really it's something strange. But I think there are really issues which go more into anima's concept, and the persona is influences the appearance of it. But there are much more complex issues behind it. Yes, please. Oh, sorry. So you want to see Marcel Marceau. Now I need help. What should I put that out?
No, the cassette.
No, it's in.
Oh,
I left it in yesterday. Hopefully nobody has taken it out.
Did you turn the power on?
I didn't turn on anything. No, but that thing should, you know, we found it out yesterday, that should become colorful. No, it isn't. No. Ha! That is a triumph of today.
What is this?
Well, that's the connection, yeah. Now. Again.
That was triumph of today. Maybe not quite.
Oh, no, it's got, no, that's the right one. You know, we found that out yesterday. Persona of flexibility, of activity, of innovation. The faculty of working in a team is demanded. And I always see there a danger of some sort of a linguistic, of a language persona. For all these words really don't say much. And something else which seems to me very typical and reflected, I don't know whether it's as strong in the States as it's in Switzerland, for instance, the belittling, it's a little dangerous. Or something I really am almost allergic at when people say, well, somebody told me before I was leaving, she was writing a thesis, not in psychology, but in acupuncture, and says, it's great fun to do it. And this necessity, everything has to be fun. You know, writing a thesis, I don't think it's so funny. It's work. And I sometimes with that emphasis, even language emphasis on fun, one tries to avoid the aspect which is really work, which is commitment. And nothing is only fun. Now, another thing which I... noticed in that context, the seduction by non-engagement. I was a few years ago invited at the marriage ceremony of a former student of mine, a young woman, and I don't know whether it's in your church it's the same custom that people speak and even the couple speaks. It's not very traditional because before they were happy to say yes, maybe unhappy to say yes, but that was it. And there they had to make some statements, and I thought I was a little bit scared when I heard the statement. So they said why they loved each other. I love you for your smile, your kindness, your caring, and so on and so on. Now, that's not difficult to love anybody for that. But what's left out is the shadow, and what's left out is the unconditioned love. I love you even if you don't smile. And, you know, that's that possibility of being always, in a way, reserved. And that, of course, has a correlation with the flexibility and very often the non-commitment concerning relationships. Euphemisms tend to maintain the persona, like bathroom for toilet, powder the nose, existential conditions like illness, death, are put away, and the persona is really shattered, and that's very healthy by children, for instance, because they are not used to these conventions yet, fortunately, and so the sayings of children have to be taken funnily, but also very seriously. Now, a persona can be kept up when one is dishonest or when one doesn't have the courage to be true, to be honest, keeping up the appearances. But, and I think that's very important, persona also can be kept up out of consideration in the interest of living or working together. You know that in apartments, in houses with apartments, the critical rooms are always the rooms shared in common, like the washing machine, the drying room, and so on and so on. And it's, keeping up the persona means paying the necessary respect to the demands of the neighbors, and sometimes one really gets annoyed by something. But I think it's important, if possible, not to lose temper, because that can lead to long-term problems. There's a Chinese proverb saying, which I think is very important: a moment of patience can prevent from big misfortune. A moment of impatience can destroy a whole life. And sometimes, very often even, it's the persona who helps us staying patient or becoming patient. Thomas Mann, the famous German writer, has written, I quote it first in German and then in English, "Äußerlich soll man sich anziehen zum Teufel, innerlich ist man Abenteurer genug." Externally one should dress, because internally one is enough of an adventurer. And so he kept that up there, and I think it's very good. And with that goes a little joke, the difference between a lady and a diplomat. If the diplomat says yes, he means perhaps. If he says perhaps, he means no. If a diplomat says no, he is no diplomat. Now, if a lady says no, she means maybe. If she says maybe, she says yes. And if she's yes, she's no lady. The opposite. In a way, you find with persons who are, I say, pathologically honest, and tell everybody the truth or what they think the truth is. Very often, exactly these people are extremely touchy and oversensitive as soon as one addresses some weaker points of themselves. Very, very, very typical. Or then another example, which I learned many, many decades ago in a course in Brandeis about American theater, where the professor talked about the stereotype of the noble prostitute. And that professor has said, below that terrible and nasty behavior and their meanness, they really have a heart of gold if you only know them better. The trouble is, you never know them better. So, over-identification with the persona, as we have seen in that example, easily leads to inflations. Conflicts and difficulties in life, therefore, are often very positive in their effect, although certainly not agreeable. But it's healthy to be confronted with problems and even with failures from time to time, because then the danger of over-identification with the persona is avoided. The confrontations with the borders of the unconscious provides the opportunity to differentiate ourselves from the persona. And the more one distinguishes himself or herself from the persona, the more the persona can be developed and cultivated. A basically good relationship can be recognized by the fact that after a crisis, the falling of the persona, of the usual persona, this relationship stays intact or is even better than before. Whereas shaky persona-based relationships usually don't survive severe crisis. This rule applies to a certain extent even to individuals intrapsychically. A personal crisis can provide the possibility for a new start, a more fitting adaptation to inner and outer conditions, but it also can lead to a personal disaster. Let me quote Jung, regressive restoration of the persona. A collapse of the conscious attitude is no small matter. It always feels like the end of the world, as though everything had tumbled back into original chaos. One feels delivered up, disoriented, like a rudderless ship that is abandoned to the moods of the elements. So at least it seems. In reality, however, one has fallen back upon the collective unconscious, which now takes over the leadership. We could multiply examples of cases where at the critical moment a saving thought, a vision, an inner voice came with an irresistible power of conviction and gave life a new direction. Probably we could mention just as many cases where the collapse meant a catastrophe that destroyed life. For at such moments, morbid ideas are also liable to take root, or ideals wither away, which is no less disastrous. And then he gives the example of a man who, after such a catastrophe, a businessman who did not have the courage to take any risk anymore, but he was happy or unhappy with a work which was much below his capacities. And Jung calls that the regressive restoration of the persona. And that's also something, you know, which is risky and which has to be taken in consideration in analysis. Something very strange which I have remarked in different cases, that a successful student, instead of after studying, goes into profession, takes up another study and another study. In fact, I know that case of one former student of us who finished teacher training. Then she got a diploma in music, in viola. Then she got a diploma in biology, and now she is raising Wachten quails, these little birds. Yeah, and because she loves animals, not selling them, but selling the eggs. But you know, for somebody who has at least three successful degrees, it's like not having the self-confidence of exposing oneself to the profession. And there I would say it's not a regressive restoration of persona, it's never having dared to go out of that persona of learning and of working below one's level. Very, very deep and good question. Could you specify what exactly
you are interested in? Because it's such a vast issue. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Regressive first version of the persona. Yeah. 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 You know, I try to give a very personal answer. In these moments, more than ever, you depend on people. You depend on people who are with you and who accept you in whatever form your grief takes. And then, because then, you know, the being faced with the chaos, with the catastrophe, always contains elements of annihilation, whereas if you feel there are that there are people with you, you get that even when you are, when your persona is shattered, you feel accepted, and that, you know, it might seem momentaneous or short term, but that's, in my opinion, to a certain degree in an experience, the basic condition of getting not over the grief but over the temptation of annihilation. To be able to not only to renounce the persona, that's very often so, but to feel that you in these moments are not alone goes over the persona, because persona does not play a big part in these moments, comes again later. You know, again, a personal experience, which also has to do with gender issues. When I was suffering a loss, I was with analyst colleagues, male, and they either did not react or reacted very clumsily. Whereas all my analysts or students who are doing supervision with me, women, acted absolutely empathically correctly. And it's so important. You know, and I think I would have come to that issue later, but it fits now very well. There is a danger of over-identifying with the professional persona. Because we, as analysts, have very often to do with people who are in grief and faced with catastrophe and so on. So when we are on a level of friends, of colleagues, confronted with the same thing, we don't know what to do. There's and women are much more, they know it. Yeah. So I don't know whether it's gender or bringing up, but it's wonderful when they do it. There's a corresponding example of identification and troubles of identification with the professional persona. It was a congress of cardiologists. Now, one of the cardiologists suffered a heart attack. Nobody there doing anything. That moment, you know? It's, they are all colleagues out now. What do you do? Whereas if you are addressed in your profession, you do the right thing immediately. And that's one of the big problems of over-identification with the professional persona, that also we, you know, of course there are different schools and different temperaments of doing analysis and therapy, but very often we are really confronted with sad situations, and the temptation to react persona-like and to explain it is terrible. Instead of just being with. but really being with. Hold the tension and you know, and to follow the impulses. These impulses cannot be acted out. But for instance, I was when somebody's really crying in front of you, what do you do? You would like to hold the person. You can't hold it, but you can't hold her or him. But you have to go into that feeling, and that's the thing to do, and not analyzing it away. Being with is more important than saying where it comes from. And I think there, you know, Jungian psychology has big shadow sides, as we all know, but I think there we have greater chances than, for instance, psychoanalysis. The psychoanalysis always has to objectivize, always has to take the stay outside. And so the danger of it is becoming a little bit too much of a distance. In which way? Can be, but of what do you think?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I know that hard cancer, that you can't have
to be or maybe. Maybe. Oh, that's very good. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm in control. Yeah. Very good. Well, talking about the different schools, you know, every school has its own aims, and when it's behavioral therapy, the aim is that you behave better. Rogers therapy is that you feel better. Psychoanalysis, I found out, is the aim is getting to know better why you don't feel better. now just Jungian therapy, I want to say that the aim of Jungian therapy is to dream better. So you want to do it. Yeah, thank you. The Messing applied to the second half of it, where it puts on this laughing persona, and he can't get rid of it. And then there's that enormous, I think that's high art, the enormous discrepancy between his body expression, which is sorrowful, which is terrible, and always that smile. So he cannot grieve. You know, he is so identified with the persona. There is no suffering, there is no grief, which you can admit. He wants you, but he doesn't come there. So there's a split in the personality. A split. Yeah. And you counter that. You have people who really cannot abandon the persona, because the persona is the thing which holds them together. Yes, please? Oh, yes. Absolutely. Yeah, that's a very, very important question here. And that leads me to an interesting case and an interesting problem. I think if somebody is in that situation, what one usually would be tempted to do is to get over it and to say, well, that's nothing, something important. And I think it's very important to go into it. What don't I like about myself? And then it's very, very important to try to that the what I talked in the first half about the ego ideal, how would I really want to look like, and the appearance are coming closer together. We'll look tomorrow at an example where somebody, a young woman, was not ugly at all, but pretty, but she thought she wasn't really noticed by people. So what she wanted is to look like Barbie. And she had, I think, over 30 operations, and she said the only part in her face and in her body what was not changed was the lower lip. Everything else was changed. And she really looked like Barbie. Now she said, well, people would think I'm stupid, but she's a member of Mensa. Yeah. So she really did it. And, you know, we could say, well, that's stupid and not necessary. But she genuinely feels better. So there are means, and you know, even I will talk also tomorrow, we will discuss tomorrow about cosmetics and even plastic surgery. I'm a little bit skeptical about plastic surgery because very often people get different, but they are not themselves anymore. They're not what nature wants. And it's so important, and it's so, for some people so difficult to accept themselves the way they are. Now I came across something which goes exactly in your direction. Goes a little bit beyond. If there is a remarkable discrepancy between self-concept and being seen by others, that's a sign of disturbance. When one has a completely different impression of one's appearance, not only outer appearance, from others, there's something is wrong, and it goes in both directions. For instance, during my during my work in teacher training, if all the training teachers, the mentors, the practicing teachers had a distinct impression of a student, and the student denied that completely, it was much worse than if everyone agreed. Because when one agrees, then one can start work from there. Whereas if that self-concept is different, you can't. Now, interestingly enough, there's also the other one. It works the other way around. I had also, during my student counseling, a girl in my counseling who really was very beautiful. And she always said, I'm ugly, I have to go see a dermatologist, I'm terrible, and there was no way of convincing it. Now, I'll show you. And she had, and I wonder, in a way, if that's not typical for eating disorders. She had a heavy eating disorder. And I show you pictures she made, and then I will show you pictures of another young woman whom I did not have analysis, but in supervision. And, I supervised that case, and I'm not so familiar like with the first one. But it will be absolutely remarkable, the difference between persona and the self-concept, and her self-concept really is much more of inner self-concept. So trying to convince her on the level of persona won't help at all. So I want to show you these pictures. Now, again, we have to scan whiskey. Thank you. That was more. I think you can see. How can I disappear? I think I see. May I sit here?
thank you. Because I wouldn't, yeah. So that is, in a way, a little bit idealized self-portrait, but not very far from the impression she made. Now, just a second. A little bit different, but not so much. Now, yes, that's the one. No, it's her. It's all her pictures. What? Yeah, made by herself, and you know, it's not really conscious, but it. No, she looked like the first one. No.
But she saw herself looking anorexic.
She didn't. She wasn't anorexic. She was bulimic. And the difference is, her appearance, her persona, was the first two. And when I was, and she was always saying, "No, I'm ugly, and I have to see a dermatologist. I'm it's terrible." Working with her did not help at all, because probably her real self-concept was bad. Now it gets worse. It gets worse because, and I think, you know, we behind eating disorders, there's not only a disturbed relationship, but there's something demoniac now. Look at that.
Oh my God.
What? She. It's all herself. Short. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you think this is?
Well, you know, it's difficult to say what that is. I think the we could say it's a demon on the animus level. Mm-hmm. And it's really saying it's a negative animus is understatement, and yeah, that's a stupid Jungian labeling. No. Yeah. Absolutely. Now, if you are confronted with these. Not pictures, but images. You know how difficult this is. And
with the fact that she is putting out the phony persona,
yeah.
She knows how she feels inside. Would that cause this kind of
self-concept?
Perception? Yeah.
I would say. Yeah, it certainly plays a role.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you couldn't play something. You couldn't design something like that. In connection with yourself. Now, something strange, and I tell you, with this case I'm very familiar, but a parallel case I'm not familiar with. I only knew it from supervision, but it shows an amazingly parallel discrepancy between self-concept and underlying imagines, I would say, soul pictures. So that's a different thing. And you know, the typical thing is these anorectic women are so extremely talented, not only in artistic expression, but also in intelligence. You can so well talk with them, but you don't get through. That's one. Now, one which is more. Okay, now, something which is closer to her consciousness. She drew herself and said where she was feeling too heavy.
No, I think here I'm not sure. The other one, not in the sessions at home. No, she brought them. No. But the difficulty with these patients, I would say, is really to establish a continuous staying on the problem. They just show it, and poof, away they are. Not all. No, we will see tomorrow. No, I will show a video of a man who did who also underwent plastic surgery. No. Oh yeah, well he is. Now the next is really enigmatic. It's almost archetypal. Yeah. It's to me, you know, that's an archetype of dark goddess in a way. Like the on the opposite end, the devil. So what they are male of him doesn't play a big role here.
It's so much like the other one.
Yes. But now it gets again. Now it would be interesting to do from that standpoint of the persona and what's underlying it, one's systematic research about eating disorders. Yeah. Well, I hope you won't have two bad dreams tonight. Otherwise, see your analyst. Well, for that you have to go into analysis. You know? It's actually a hidden kind of advertisement session for analysis. Decomposition, yeah. No. The second series is the first is one and that's one. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's what I think is important to ask. Yeah. Very much so. Yeah. You know, and absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, I was lecturing in Victoria about vampires, and they have a very big relationship with eating disorders. Now. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's not accepting, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That's very, very true what you say. Yes. But you know, I'll now see the last picture, which is really despair. It's almost eaten up in that dark feminine. Yeah. It's terrible, huh? When you compare it with the first, yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. I have to rely on maybe statistics, but I have exactly that feeling working with them. And you know the
You know, the trouble which I experienced with these girls, and they're only girls, where I work with, is as we have that extreme discrepancy between self-concept and outer appearance, and that extreme discrepancy between that persona and the inner image, this is that split. That split is being reproduced in not coming regularly to therapy. Or that they say, well, I was so disappointed for something very minor. So they take every reason not to continue, and that's a bad thing. The split within is so big that it is as a structural pattern repeated in relationships very often, and especially also in analytical relationships. Because the analytical relationship does not, I say the difficulty of it, does not allow to just paint it and forget it and act it out. But there you really would have slowly to go into it. And there is, in a way, it's too fast in and too fast out. And that's why I have the same feeling of being powerless in these moments. Absolutely. Thank you very much. Absolutely. I didn't make the connection, but it was drawn with the first girl. And she, you know, then it's also some sort of strange exhibitionistic boasting. You can't imagine what I have been binging eating. Can't imagine it. And finished. Yeah. And yes, absolutely. The intellect is clearly yeah, and the intellect is clearly used to take distance from that extreme inner pen tension which is acted out instead of being confronted. So the intellect is really the defense mechanism. And not, and you know, usually that I come across now. Usually we use intellectual or spiritual rational approaches to understand images of the unconscious. And here, since, you know, diabolically the intellect is in the service of the defense, what else can you do? And that's why for anorectic girls, the compulsory feeding, you know, if they get the sound, and has the same ratio of healing as long-time therapy. Because the terrible thing about anorexia is the risk of dying. And so that question was really important, and I would have come to it a little bit later, but since it really fitted here, I think we should. Yeah.
It started with her own.
Yeah.
She will not see a client that is in either the second or the third hour if that client is also not signed up and disciplined in body work at some point, sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Which kind?
Oh,
that's good. That's good.
Can't work with these people if they're not.
Yeah. 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 I have now. Also a former student who is highly gifted but always managed to mess up her training just before getting the degree. And she has a symptom which is terrible. She is constantly scratching her fingers. It's complete. It's terrible. And she has, as far as I know, not, at least not admitted eating disorders. She has probably also some problems. But
her structure is exactly identical with Beckett. And I, as a matter of fact, she's also very beautiful. And she also, another issue where she completely fails is money issue. She manages never to have money and to be an editor. And because she's really also beautiful and interesting in that modern way, so I encouraged her first in order to make, in a way, easy money, and also in order to get a better relationship to her body, to do modeling. And she was half picking it up and then forgetting it again. So it's that you and that there really you have the feeling you give, you try that, you do that, they come as if nothing had happened. And after some time they don't come anymore. That's limits of analysis. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And I guess if I were an expert, I'd be trying to. Yeah. But, you know, like
no, no.
If they'll come in,
yeah.
Even without
money. Yeah, but that's the crucial point. As
and
soon as they...
What?
And what do we do then?
They want to know when they're going to be finished. When will they graduate?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. I absolutely believe you, but the important issue is, of course, it's also a question of confidence, it's a question of your skills, but it's their willing to...
And that is the end of the tape. Copyright CG Jung Society, Seattle, and the speaker. All rights reserved. No copying, please.